welcome to A Bookish Home, a podcast about all things books and reading. I'm your host, Laura Zaro-Kopinski, librarian and all-around book nerd, and my guest this week is Anne Bogle.
Anne Bogle is the creator of the blog Modern Mrs. Darcy, host of the podcasts What Should I Read Next and One Great Book, and the author of three books, including Reading People, I'd Rather Be Reading, and her latest, Don't Overthink It, Make Easier Decisions, Stop Second Guessing, and Bring More Joy into Your Life. Anne Bogle, welcome back to A Bookish Home. I'm really happy I get to chat with you again.
Oh, well, it's mutual. Thank you for having me.
Yes. So I found so many helpful tips in this new book. My copy is sort of underlined and starred, and I actually love that you even have space in the book to sort of be almost like little workbook pages to be sort of expanding on what you learn in here. But I would love to hear how you came to this topic in terms of what you wanted to write next. And then also, I just from following everyone in the book world, I know it's a very challenging time to be launching a book. We're speaking toward the end of April as sort of life has been changed very dramatically by COVID-19. So I'm just hoping that things are going well, launching the book. I know your book tour had to be canceled. So just I would love to hear a little bit about the book and just how it's been going, bringing it into the world.
Sure. Well, this is my third book. And what I've learned about writing a book is that you have to be interested enough in the topic to talk about it for years. Like, first, you got to think about it by yourself for a year or more. Then you have to talk with other people about the planning, the way it looks, the fine details of where all the commas and apostrophes go, and the marketing, which no author writes a book because they're ever interested in marketing it. But you got to be willing to have those conversations. You got to care enough about that topic. And then you put it out into the world and you talk about it. So as someone who does most of her work like driven by a curiosity to figure out how things work. I mean, I want to write about the things that I feel like I really am interested in learning about and really digging deep into, but also that will benefit other people as well. Because, I mean, writing a book is one thing, but is a book really a book if nobody reads it? I guess it is, but only kind of.
It's not only
really
kind of
complete until you bring a reader into the picture. So that's how I've always approached the process of choosing topics. And for Don't Overthink It, I mean, this is a topic that I've blogged about on Modern Mrs. Darcy some since 2011, but also like when I get together with my friends over tacos and margaritas, like this is the kind of thing we talk about. Both why do we do this to ourselves, but also like, what are you overthinking these days? That's a fun conversation topic and a discussion I've had over and over again. So this is something that I was interested in learning more about. And yes and amen to these being very strange times. My book came out March 3rd. So I left for Connecticut on March 4th. I was in New York City for the next 3 days. At the time I came home on Saturday, March 7th, you could see masks in LaGuardia Airport. You could see a few on the street in New York City. I remember being conscious of washing my hands and I elbow bumped somebody in greeting for the first time. But it was another world then.
It's amazing how quickly it all changed. But in some ways, you know, I feel like maybe you're hearing this a lot from people. It sort of seems like we need this book now more than ever, because I know for me, one of the parts of the book I keep coming back to, you talk a lot about sort of really being careful with our thoughts. And there's an image you use of sort of your mind as a garden and being sort of careful what you allow to grow there. And I think now more than ever, I have to be very conscious of what I'm allowing myself to obsess about or worry about, or the thoughts that I'm allowing to really keep playing in there. Are you finding that the response to it, that people are really talking about how timely the book is and that they're finding it extra helpful?
Yes, which I appreciate, but I mean, of course, it's not anything that I would ever, I mean, never once when I was writing this did I imagine that this was going to be an issue. Although, you know what, Laura, I'm just putting this together. It's interesting. the launching off point for my personal interest in this topic. Not specifically overthinking, but just tending your mental space. Like you said, treating your mind as a private garden and being intentional about what you allow to go there goes back to my experience in 9/11, which is something I've been thinking a lot about these days. Obviously, there are vast differences between 9/11 and COVID-19, but both are experiences which, for different ways, were very difficult on a lot of people in a mental and emotional way. I got a cough.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No. Well, I feel like the approach you take, and it's no surprise to people who listen to your podcast and follow the blog, it's a mix of like calm and practical advice and interesting stories. You really sort of help us, I think, navigate this topic while also sort of, you know, teaching us through story, which I really enjoy. And I think that one of the things that I thought was interesting, and particularly now that we're all stuck at home, there were some sections about sort of like having to be a grown up, and sometimes I just need that like tough practicality. Like, yeah, it really does make a difference to me. And I'm noticing this even more right now when I don't complete the cycle, as you talk about, and like end up with this mess of a home where I can't find anything and I'm feeling more frustrated than ever. Like some of these basic things that just sometimes we just need to tell someone to tell us that like we have to be a grown up about certain things if we, you know, like want to feel better. I'm just curious, like if there's something from the book or just in general, like tips or strategies that you think would be particularly helpful for people to handle this time better. I know for me, like the tidiness thing is big.
Right. I mean, isn't that the sad truth? I really wish. Okay. So my tendency is when we're facing a big problem, and overthinking is a big problem. First of all, like the researchers call it an epidemic. It's something lots of us deal with. But it's not just a nuisance. Like it comes at such a huge cost to ourselves, to those around us. It makes us feel bad. It drags us down. It keeps us from focusing on the things that really matter. So that's a big deal. And when something is a big deal, I want like a complex, sophisticated solution. I do not want the answer to be like, go to bed when you're tired. You know, like I want something that sounds like it was a little harder to come up with. But yeah, it's so true. Like you got to get up out of your chair since we're all working from home now and not moving. I mean, not all of us, like bless you if you're out in the world doing an essential service. But so many of us are sitting on our bums in our homes, and it's not good for your body. And what's not good for your body is not good for your brain. So we're dealing with all that too. It's so demoralizing that the answer might be actually, you know what? Don't have chips for dinner. Like that's just, that's going to be so great for you.
Or if you do clean up the mess, so it's not there in the morning facing you, like I'm finally embracing the, like, I mean, I feel like I've seen people say this for years, like actually clean up your kitchen at night and like put the dishes in the dishwasher at least, and like wipe down the counter, and you won't feel as upset when you come downstairs in the morning to a big mess. And it's like, oh yeah, if I actually take the 5 minutes to do that, I don't feel as stressed in the morning. Like, shocker.
I mean, for many different reasons.
It's hard to do.
Yeah. Well, first of all, you don't have that reminder in front of you that you had chips for dinner, because that is not going to be good for morale. Some of us are more sensitive to like clutter than others. And I am by no means a neat freak, but I am what some listeners will be like, what are you talking about? And some will know exactly, but I'm a highly sensitive person. Which just means that like my nervous system is a little more responsive than I would like to stimuli around me, which means I have 6 people at home right now and a dog who barks when people sing and jump and dance. And like, it's always noisy. And my brain is just like, please, I need some white space, like literal, metaphorical. I need a break. And a clean kitchen. Like, I don't realize how much the jumble of book mail and papers on the counter is just like a very low grade stress. But I don't realize the extent to which that is true until I like clean everything off. And my brain is like, oh, That feels so much
it's
better.
It's true. It's an actual like physical response. Like I feel like when I'm surrounded by all the clutter, I'll say to my husband, like, I feel like the walls are closing in. Like I can't do it. And I think sometimes the advice when you're feeling overwhelmed is to just like let everything go. And I think for some people, and I think your book is really helpful for this, sometimes what actually helps in those moments is keeping up the habits and the routines and the things that help make you feel safe. And you talk a lot about routine and ritual in the book as well. And I'm curious, are there any particular routines or rituals that you're finding are really important right now? And I guess just in general, how those help us, stay in a better mental state.
Yeah. First of all, that's so true. And I don't want it to be true. Like the thing about clutter and cleaning up after yourself. And it's so easy to discount that, but the brain-body connection is more important than many of us would like it to be. I mean, on the one hand, these are things that are within our control, most of our control, to a degree that, the events happening around the globe are not. So, like my motto lately has been like, control the things I can. But I mean, even people who research these things for a living and aim to influence people's behavior know that like the basics, like whether we're breathing and eating and sleeping, they're so fundamental that, you know, it's such a part of being human that it's easy to just forget about them when we're thinking about the complexities of what happens in our minds. Yeah, but they're really important. And it's so important to include these things in our daily routines, but it's probably not a stretch to say everyone's daily routine has been impacted to some degree. And even if you're talking about a really positive change in your life, like change is stressful, change is hard, and these are not positive changes we're welcoming in. So it's really hard to stick to routine, never, you know, let alone establish new ones. But yeah, routines are beautiful things. And the reason is, I'm sorry, it's pollen season. Your mental energy is a finite resource. You only have so much of it to spend every day. So when you have a routine, what it does is eliminate the mental toll that action, that decision, that process takes on your body, because it just happens automatically on your body. If you're thinking about something like you run every morning at 7 o'clock and you lift weights on Mondays, Wednesdays, Friday, and you brush your teeth when you wake up, basic stuff that you don't even have to think about. But now, especially these days, you need that mental energy more than ever, because I feel like we all have a case of quarantine brain.
Mm-hmm. Completely. And you know, as many of us are starting very new routines, I think you have helpful tips, particularly about sort of working from home. I saw some that I thought were helpful. Like, I guess you could be doing this in an office too, but that's not the case right now. The short mental health breaks. I think sometimes we think that powering through is going to be good for us, but you had suggestions like flipping through a cookbook, or could you talk about how like mental health breaks can be really helpful routines to be working in?
Yeah. Well, I mean, if we work in an office or if we work at home, we have a routine. But if you've just gone from an office into a home, your routine has likely just been taken from you. And it's, I mean, all of a sudden you need to focus on how you're going to get the work done, not on the work itself. I mean, it's not that you choose one or the other. You have to think about both. And even I've been working mostly from home for years, and yet my own schedule has been disrupted so much because everyone else's schedule has changed, and that affects me. And also I suddenly have 4 kids at home all the time. And it's just different. Like now I can't lock myself in my office all day because I would feel like a terrible parent. There's one day or two where I've needed to do that, but I don't feel good about it. But like when we do change our routine so drastically, we lose some things that we really relied on and we may not even realize they're gone. Like, for example, you probably had a commute if you left the home in the morning, which might have been a time that you were alone with your own thoughts, which is something that a lot of people living in some kind of community of 2 or more people are maybe not doing anymore. You may have ticked through your day. You may have listened to your favorite podcast. You may have just like rolled the windows down and like enjoyed the quiet. You had a period of time where your brain knew you were transitioning from one space to another, and now that's gone. I would really encourage anyone who's like grappling for a new routine to think about whether it might be beneficial to establish some kind of like air quote commute in your new life. Even before we had COVID-19, something I started doing last year was walking myself to work. After my kids went to school, I would take my dog. I mean, my dog was a big fan of this fake commute, but I would take my dog and we'd go on like a 15-minute walk around the neighborhood just to let my brain transition some from my home life to my work life, even though they both happened at home. Because if my kids left and then I walked like the 14 steps into my office and sat down, that was really abrupt. And it, you know, I was excited to get to work. So that was nice, but I felt like I couldn't think about my day. I just plunged into my day and that wasn't as effective. Right now, I know that I mean, in my work at home life, I find that I build my own routines and rituals around little things like stopping to walk the dog, stopping to make a cup of coffee, and we do pour overs at my house. So like that's a solid 7 minutes where you stop, you pause, you think about how it's going, you regroup. These days it's spring in Louisville. It's really nice out. Like the lilac bush is brooming by our front porch swing.
Oh, I love
And so
lilacs.
I'm building like a certain part of my daily rhythm is to step away from the computer, which you probably don't need to be at all the time unless you're like, you know, some kind of, so I've like built into my day, whether or not the lilac bush is blooming. I have portions of my day where I step away from the computer, sometimes go outside if I can help it, change the laundry that requires me to do a few flights of stairs, do work on a legal pad instead of a screen to give my eyes and my brain a switch in rhythms. To keep my brain feeling fresh. Also, it's a total myth that we could like power through an 8-hour workday. Your brain cannot sustain focus on anything for that long.
Yeah, it's interesting that I'm struck by that idea of the fake commute. I know, like many people, I'm sort of trading off childcare duties with my husband right now, and I'm working remotely for a library, and I find myself being like, okay, like, just dive right in, like start, you know, he's taken the kids and I've sat down at my computer, just go. But I think maybe building it, even if it's a 5-minute transition, would probably be beneficial. I think sometimes we think, or at least I do, I have to maximize every single minute, but maybe it would actually be more effective to like ease myself in, even if it's just literally sitting and sipping my coffee for like 1 minute before I open emails or whatever it is. Thought about
that
before.
It's hard. Okay. Talking to people who are learning how to do their job remotely during COVID-19 reminds me, and I'm sorry for non-parents, but like I know that we're readers, we all have imagination, but it reminds me of the days when my firstborn first went to preschool. So he went to preschool for 2 mornings a week for 2 hours and 45 minutes. And like, I drop him off and like, I could just feel the adrenaline surge through my body. Cause I felt like I had 2 hours and 45 minutes and I had to make the absolute best of it because it was going to be the only daytime alone time I got, these 2 chunks for the entire week. And I just felt like I was just like rushing through everything to get as much done as I possibly could. And for people working from home with young children, who are doing that childcare trade-off right now, I feel like you have got to be in that same position and you feel like you have to be working every little bit you can. And what people who work from home discover over time is that the good and the bad, mostly bad of that, is that your work is always there so you can do it anytime, which often quickly feels like whenever you have like a minute, you could like snatch a little bit of work time. But what you do is you train your brain to be scanning for like, when can I run down the hall and do my thing? When can I check my email? You know, when can I send that report? When can I? And that is a very inefficient way to go about your work. But also like it's no way to live. It just doesn't feel good. So managing that intentional approach to work and a little bit of boundaries, which it all feels very fluid right now. So it's definitely not the path of least resistance, but it's definitely the path of better mental health. As stinky as that is.
You're describing me completely right now. I'm like, it's such a big transition. And I know for me, I had just started this job before this all happened. And so it's definitely, it's a learning curve on many levels, but it's, it's that feeling of, oh, okay, the baby's going down for a nap and she is like occupied. I could check some emails or I could do, and it's, it ends up feeling like it's always creeping in. And I think, just practicing, yeah, different routine and setting those boundaries, because it is so ineffective. Like you're not, I know, rationally that I'm not like being, not even being that productive in those moments, but it's so tempting that we can't always be doing work. So I think guarding against that is definitely a challenge.
Well, and I'm saying this is a conscientious firstborn daughter. Okay. Like it feels like the right thing for a dependable employee to do, to like, try to fit it in wherever you can. But, and it's hard right now to take the long view of a work from home situation. When it feels like we're all just like getting by, it feels like you're in emergency mode. So who cares if it's the best practice, but your brain cares and that's going to wear it out real quick.
Yeah. And then when you do get that designated time, you already feel fried. So it's, yeah, that's not great. And it's, I think just forming different habits is challenging. And actually, I'm looking to, I had written down a quote that you included from Virginia Woolf, who I love. And I think during this time, it's interesting to be thinking about, she said, habits gradually change the face of one's life as time changes one's physical face and one does not know it. Which I think is so interesting. And it's sort of like, what habits are we, creating right now? What habits are we letting go? What habits are we, do we want to be starting? Because they are going to take form and shape us one way or another through all of this and just in general in life. So I don't know. I thought that was interesting. Just really thinking about our habits and
it's
our
hard
routines.
Because you don't even realize how much you depend on a certain habit until it's instantly like poof, gone. Like your commute, you don't realize how important that was to your process. I'm not saying it's important for everybody to have a commute. Okay, that is not what I mean. But you don't realize how much your brain has come to depend on that rhythm in your life until it's suddenly gone, and the structure of your workplace and how you got a little bit of exercise, like walking the three blocks in the parking garage or, you know, walking home from the bus stop. But suddenly like all those things are gone. I work from home and I have for years, and I was flabbergasted at how much more I sat the first couple of weeks we were all at home. I did not realize. And this is like, I was walking the dog 3 miles a day and running every other day. And still I was sitting all the time. And I just didn't realize how much I was up and about, just like going to my car or walking errands, you know, walking to the library, until my hip.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. I was just going to say, well,
but then my
hip
started screaming at me and I like took stock and I was like, oh, I've just been, unless I'm exercising, like I have no useful walks at all anymore. And like we moved where we did so that we would have useful walks all the time. And it wasn't until like I was feeling physical pain that I took stock and I was like, oh, I am sitting on my bum like for hours longer every day than I had before. Even though I work from home then, I work from home now, but it was still very different to my body.
One of the things I've noticed, you know, a habit that has not changed, luckily, is, you know, still wanting to read as much as I can, although I have been having to guard, like only in the past week or so do I feel like I'm finally not like reaching to check the New York Times or CNN to see what's happening. I'm starting to train myself to like pick up my book. But I feel like what I'm in the mood to read has changed. And, has that been the case for you at all? I'm curious what you've been reading lately and if, certain things have been drawing you more than others.
Oh, that's definitely the case for me and for tons of readers. I mean, whenever it comes to anything in the reading life, it is never just you. And that is more true here than most times. At the time all this started, I had a stack of like heavy hitting literary fiction by my bed that I was so excited to dig into. But as soon as I started dealing with the new world of coronavirus, I didn't want to touch it. Like I wanted to read easy, breezy, lighthearted, happy ending, contemporary fiction. That's what I wanted. I feel like I need to insert a little caveat. It can be really difficult to write fiction that reads easy breezy. So I'm just saying I wanted authors who had worked really hard to deliver a delightful reading experience. I did not want to read a book that like wrestles with the underlying sinful nature of humanity. Like that is just not where I wanted to go.
Are there any in particular that come to mind that you've enjoyed in that category?
Some of those were honestly quite forgettable, as many books are. I really enjoyed, there was one good disaster book I enjoyed reading, but it took me a few weeks to want to pick that up. I know that I really enjoyed the new Sonali Dev, which is a retelling of Persuasion, Jane Austen's Persuasion. And that was lots
of fun. Oh, I love Persuasion. That's my favorite Jane Austen, so I'll have to check that out. Well, I did want to ask you if you two of the things that I've been in the mood for, and I'm curious if anything comes to mind, like escapist women's fiction, and I'll give a few examples. I loved Evie Drake Starts Over, and Things You Save in a Fire, which I think I got the recommendation from you, The Unhoneymooners, and Royal Holiday, like. Books where I really care what happens to the character, but I'm also just, it's a fun escapist read, but the women are smart and relatable and have like interesting lives. Are there any in that wheelhouse that you would recommend or
yes,
that come to
mind?
Yes, and
that is exactly the kind of thing that I was in the mood to read, write about. I'm getting back more to myself now and I'm starting to pick up that literary fiction again. But goodness, not at first. Well, first of all, you'll be happy to hear that Jasmine Guillory has a new book coming out in June, or at least that's the plan. She's been publishing so quickly that I'd be surprised if they disrupted her release and pushed that back because of COVID-19. But I mean, who knows? I'm not sitting in the boardroom making these decisions, although I have some questions if I could just, figure out what exactly publishers are trying to do. But Beth O'Leary is a fun author there. Abby Waxman. It depends on how like sexy you want your books to get, but I know lots of people are loving. What's the author's name? The books are Get a Life, Chloe Brown, and then her new one, Take a Hint, Danny Brown. Fun, lucky heroines. Who are dealing with hard stuff, but like strong sense of humor, love story. Those are the kinds of books I'm really enjoying right now. Not the only kinds of books.
Yeah, I'll link to all those. There's one other category, if anything comes to mind. I've had this urge for I was looking at my list, like cozy, character-driven British, but like historical. I was writing this down. The Gown I loved, and then The Summer Before the War, and then like in that same TV family, Home Fires, and of course, Downton Abbey, like tight-knit communities navigating crisis in England are somehow strangely comforting to me right now. I don't know if there's any other books in that category that come to mind that you would recommend.
Home Fire counts as strangely comforting?
Yes, I don't know why, just because in this crisis, like I see them like making jam and like coming together as a community, and I find it strangely comforting, and I was devastated to know that there are only two seasons.
Oh, you're talking about the show. Yes, okay, so if anyone out there has not yet read the Guernsey Literary and Potato Peel Pie Society or seen the Netflix adaptation, now is totally the time. Different kind of book completely, but 84 Charing Cross Road is a cozy, warm British epistolary story set in earlier era that is just like pure comfort reading for book lovers.
Ooh,
well, it's skinny, so it won't keep you occupied for terribly long. But if you need like a little bit of momentum in your reading life, it can be perfect for that. Lovely War by Julie Barry could be a good one. It's a World War I novel. It's got a really interesting setup involving, I was thinking Aristotle. That's not who I mean at all. Involving Aphrodite and Ares walking into a swanky Manhattan hotel lobby and getting a room upstairs. But pretty soon the gods are all sitting around this nice hotel room looking down at these mere mortals on Earth. So Aphrodite can tell her idiot husband, like, look, dude, this is what real love looks like. You don't know anything. So he takes you to these two young couples as they meet and court and go through these wartime hardships in the 1910s. And it's, I know that sounds weird, but like it totally works. I love it when an author can take an ordinary story and like imbue it with this feeling of universality and like deep importance. And with this setup, she totally does that. Like, look, these are normal people, but this is an epic tale. And it's great. It's so fun.
This is wonderful. Well, now more than ever, we need you as our book whisperer. So thank you for that. I'll link to all of those. And I encourage people to head over to Modern Mrs. Darcy and to listen to your podcasts. I just feel like you're such a wonderful resource for all of us to turn to. And I'm so excited that it's almost time for the summer reading guide to come out. We need this in our lives. And just for if anyone has not heard about your summer reading guide, can you just tell us about that
sure.
a little bit, or
well,
tell listeners?
First of all, thank you. That is very kind. For the summer reading guide, we've been doing this since 2012. So this is going to be our ninth. And every year I put out a collection of titles that I can't wait for everyone to read this summer. I try to describe these in a way that you'll be able to recognize, like, yes, that is totally for me, or no, I should keep moving. Because like, if I loved it, that doesn't mean anything if we don't enjoy the same kind of books. So I try to talk about these books in a way that you can say like, oh, that sounds really good given my reading taste. But every year I read a couple hundred books, not a couple hundred from start to finish, but I pick up about 300 looking for the right titles in the guide. Everything in the guide are books that I've read first page to last, sometimes more than once, can, you know, talk about them all. And we've got a really great guide this year with some special content, and I'm really excited to put it out there on May 14th to the public. It's going out a few days early to our book clubbers and What Should I Read Next patrons.
Oh, I can't wait. May 14th. I will definitely link to that when it comes out, and I'm excited. It'll be different this year. Normally I'm running off to, you know, place all my physical library book holds. I think this year it's going to be lots of ebooks.
Okay, that reminds me. I have another historical book I wanted to tell you about. There's a new historical novel that's not a Jane Austen retelling, but it's about the life and work of Jane Austen. It's historical fiction. It's set between the wars in Jane Austen's small British town of Chawton. So you've got the individual lives of the villagers. Everybody's facing something hard, but they're getting through. They all find out through various means that they all turn to Jane Austen for comfort reading. And when a big, bad golf course business threatens to buy Jane Austen's home in the village of Chawton, that's where she lived out her last days, and raise it to build like a new clubhouse and golf course, like that's sacrilege, right? So they all find each other and bond together to defeat the big bad business. But more emphasis, there's definitely more emphasis on like the coziness of taking solace in literature, and also from the readers that you are brought to, that you've like, that are kindred spirits that you connect with because of these books that you love. So fun. Okay.
Okay, I need that book in my hands immediately. That is definitely my next
it's
read. What is that
Jane
one
Austen
called?
Society. It's by Natalie Jenner, and it's coming out May 26th. And we have been assured by the publisher that publication date, unlike many big debuts coming this season, is not moving.
That sounds fabulous. That just sounds like the perfect comfort read right now. I love that. And I actually, I've been dying to go there and like take a bookish pilgrimage, but I talked to the director of that, Jane Austen house in that village. So on so many levels, I like would love to immerse myself in that story and that part of the world. So that's wonderful. Well, Anne, thank you so much for chatting with me, for your book, and for all that you do for us book nerds. We appreciate you, and I hope everything goes well as you continue on a virtual book tour of sorts, and that you stay safe and well.
Same to you. For links to all of the books mentioned on this week's episode, you can head to abookishhome.com, and there you'll also find other book recommendations and ideas for creating a culture of reading in your home. You can also follow me on social media @abookishhome. Thanks for listening, and happy reading. And I hope everyone stays safe.